Jag mitt batteri stänger av en cell.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Swiss Pats. I am Don Delco, and joining me is Susie Lyon.
G'day, Don.
G'day, Susie. How are you doing?
Awesome. Amazing. Fantastic.
Good. So how's your French? Do you speak any French?
Oui, oui.
Perfect. Nailed it.
Bonjour. Well, au revoir.
Our guest today, who's going to come up a little bit later in the program, is the one and only Isabel Johnson, who is the owner of Prêt-à-Porter. I think I said that correctly.
Beautiful.
I apologize, Isabel, if I butchered that. Anyway, she is a trained opera singer and a French teacher based in Geneva, who I think at this moment is giving birth to a baby daughter.
Yeah, right about now.
Yeah.
She's also not our first opera singer guest.
No, it's
our
second one.
How amazing is that?
That's wild. First one that speaks French, though. I don't know if Susan speaks French.
Probably.
I apologize, Susan. You probably do. We always have on smarter people than us.
Yeah.
So we should just assume that they could do a lot of things that we can't. So anyway, our interview with Isabel will be coming up a little bit later in the program. But before we get to that, I wanted to tell you something. I am feeling very Swiss today.
Oh, really?
Because over the weekend, we went down to Engelberg and we hiked.
Hiking?
Legit. Hiked in the mountains.
Hiking boots.
I got strapped on my hiking boots.
Holy moly.
They cost me 200 francs because that's just what they cost around here.
Who are you and what have you done with Don?
I know. And you know what? It was a lot of fun.
Engelberg is beautiful.
Oh, it was awesome. So we drove there. It was like an hour and a half from Basel. Then you take a gondola up the mountain to this awesome area that has a huge playground for kids, a huge hotel restaurant. There's a toboggan run that we did. Have you ever seen pictures of this thing?
No.
It's basically these little plastic sleds with like a brush on the ground, and they pull you up and they shoot you down. Basically, this the thing that looks like, you know, those steel barrels cut in half, kind of laid.
Oh, yeah. There's often like viral videos of people taking like GoPro on them. Yeah.
So much fun.
Yeah, they are fun.
It was a lot of fun. The kids were able to do it with us. It was just a blast. And then we went higher up on the mountain on a chairlift. I didn't get scared. I used to get
so
scared.
So far, I'm not hearing any hiking. I'm hearing a lot of, you know, going up on a gondola and going down on a toboggan.
Yeah, yeah. So after that, then we took a chairlift up to the very tippy top of the mountain where then we walked down. And it was a lovely time. There was cows. There were bugs. There was amazing views. There was paragliders. Oh, my God. Have you seen these nut jobs?
I'd do that.
It is insanity.
Even after watching that video that went viral a few months ago of the guy not being strapped into the paragliding mechanical isms.
Oh, yeah.
In Interlaken, I'd still do it.
So we were sitting there watching these people, and like, first of all, there's all these people with these huge backpacks, and me like a dumbass, I'm like, gee, they must be camping for the night. They're not camping. They were taking the cable car up and then walking to this hill, right, where they unfurled these parachutes, laid them on the ground, hooked them to their back, and then they just started running down the hill.
And it sounds like so much fun.
After about like 10 steps, like they were just airborne.
Yeah.
It was nuts. It was crazy. Those people, they got to screw loose.
Well, this is the thing. We've had a couple of guests on that enjoy hiking and walking. We've had a guest who did a pilgrimage. We've had a guest who wrote a book for hiking for kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sounds like that they've convinced you.
Well, shout out to Melinda because of her book. We found kind of an easy one for the kids, as I use air quotes. But really, it was an easy one for me, right? Yeah. And it was an easy one. Half the hike was on like this paved road that was just quite lovely. And we got to get close to cows. And, man, they smell. Wow, are they stinky?
I'm a little scared of cows.
Really?
Yeah.
Aren't they docile animals?
I think so, but they're just so big. And I don't know, I get a little scared of them. Yeah, that's completely irrational, but I am a little scared of cows.
It is
I don't like that we're able to walk in the same field as each other. I would rather that they had their field and we had our field and that there was a fence between us.
I get that. I get that. But they are quite large.
They are big, yeah.
Quite large creatures.
I think that they are more scared of us than we are of them. But I'm not massively comfortable walking next to a cow.
So I'm not real massively comfortable with being in nature still. And like, I have this very like antiseptic view of nature, but like standing next to these cows, like they just had flies all over them. Like their udders were leaking milk. Like it was gross. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. We use these things for things like milk and cheese and burgers and steaks. Like, I still have a 5-year-old mind where it's like, I love burgers. And I'm like, oh, but I had cows. We don't eat cows. Silly people. That's just a cow. No, we eat those things.
Yeah.
We use those things for food consumption. But it's like, I still have that disconnect, right? And then when I'm standing in front of one, it's like, they're just, ugh.
I don't think we're eating those cows.
No, probably not.
Those cows were not eating.
They were just drinking their milk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about farming or agriculture to be sure, though.
I don't either, but I know the views were immaculate.
Amazing views, smelly cows.
Yes.
The smell of cows doesn't bother me. Just like being next to them bothers me.
But not their smell.
No.
Okay. Well, you sit next to me during a podcast. That doesn't bother you?
Yeah, well, meaning to talk to you about that.
All right. So let's just move on from hygiene and get to our guest this week. Like I said, her name is Isabel Johnson. She is a trained opera singer originally from Montreal, but she lives in Geneva and she runs Prêt-à-Parler. Parler? I think it's Parler. I apologize, Isabel. She's an amazing French teacher, and let's just listen to her interview. So here is Isabel Johnson.
Good afternoon, and joining us is Isabel Johnson. She's a French-Canadian from Montreal. Welcome, Isabel.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. So welcome to Swiss Pats. We've got you here because you are the owner of a online language school called Prêt-à-Parler, CH.
Perfect and pronunciation.
I was working on that, so thank you very much. I got a little pat myself on the back. But you also have a 1-year-old son, and you're pregnant with your second child. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. That's very kind.
So what brought you, let's start where we always start, which is what brought you to Switzerland? Because that, for us, is always interesting to find out, why are you here?
So why am I here? That's a very good question. That's always what we ask each other as expats, huh, when we start the conversation. It's a good icebreaker. So I basically came to Switzerland because of my husband. I think I'm not the only one, and many expat wives.
It's a story as old as time.
Exactly. So we were based before in Munich. And that I got to Munich because of my job, met my husband there, and then he got a job offer in Geneva, Switzerland. And that's why I followed him, and I do not regret it. It's a lovely, lovely experience.
So was coming to Geneva your first experience of Switzerland, or had you visited before that?
Never. So that was my very first time. I knew of Geneva. In fact, I was a little bit relieved to come to a French-speaking part of Switzerland, having lived in German for almost 4 years. And I had heard of Geneva because of the UN, of course, Switzerland, the chocolate and all the typical cliché. So I was very excited to come here, but also very, not stressed, but it was a difficult decision to make because I was quite deeply rooted in Munich with my job, with my friends. I already had to do the expat experience with Munich, and then doing it again, I thought, oh, can I do this again? Of course, we can do this again. Mm-hmm. And in such a beautiful country, it's not so difficult.
It's not so hard, is it?
Exactly.
So take us back to when you moved to Munich. What was that like? Were you young, single? Not that you're not young anymore, but, you know, did you, you came for your job, and was it, you know, it's one of those things like, oh, I was just going to go for a year and then you mm-hmm. ended up staying, or was the plan to be there?
So that's a very good question. I was young. As you said, I was 25. I had done my master's degree, bachelor degree. I'm an opera singer. That's my background. So I did opera and languages. And when I was done with my degree, I decided to move to Europe. That was my dream. Actually, my family is more European than Canadian. My father is French. My mother is Belgian. I was born and raised in Canada, in Montreal. And then I thought, okay, I speak French, I speak English, because I studied in English at McGill. I had learned German and Italian. Italian is not too difficult as a French speaker. I need to improve my German. So when I graduated, I thought, okay, I will apply to all the different festivals and find a job as an opera singer, and I'll try to get into a competition. So I got into the Queen Elizabeth competition in Brussels, which is a very big international competition. And I thought, by joining this competition, I'll also make my big move to Europe. So I moved in, it was April 2011, which is a funny thing, because the day I moved, it was the wedding of William and Kate.
Oh,
I know, I know. And as a Canadian, I know it's bad, but a French Canadian, we're not so much into royalty. We don't know much about it. So I had no idea. And the lady who hosted me really wanted to watch the wedding. So when I had just landed, I was really jet lagged. We watched it, and that's how I was propelled into a completely different world, coming little Canadian from a small town. And it's funny because later on I met a Brit, and my husband is English. So I think that was an omen coming to England.
You met your prince.
Exactly. I met my prince. So then I did about a month in Belgium. Then I moved to Germany because that was the goal, to improve my German. I stayed a few months in Cologne, in Düsseldorf. I traveled a lot. And then I made my way to Munich. I had some friends who were living in Munich, and it was really something that I was very attracted by the city itself, the Lederhosen, which is a bit similar to Switzerland, Oktoberfest, but also the Opera House, which is amazing. The quality is amazing. Anywhere in Germany, they have beautiful opera houses, but the biggest ones would be, one of the main ones would be in Munich, the Bayerische Staatsoper. So there I improved my German. I could speak a little bit of German before, but not so much. And that was, quite a challenge. The first year in Bavaria, in Munich, I struggled a lot. I tried to understand from what I had learned at university, but it's so different what you learn in a class and what's happening in real life, right? Yeah. The conversation is different. The way, theoretical German, Hochdeutsch compared to Bayerisch or Schweizerdeutsch here, or theoretical French. And when you speak French for real in your everyday life, that's completely different. So I had to adapt second time, because when I moved to Montreal from my little hometown, I could speak English, but not so well. So it was, let's say, a second adaptation from English and then to German.
So the German, when you were trying to improve your German or become more fluent in German when you were living in Munich, did you find it hard to completely immerse yourself with the language, or were people kind of noticing, you don't speak very good German, because Munich's such a big city? Did they come back at you in English? Or because I find, like, in a place like Basel, where I want to go and try and practice my high German, as crappy as it is, I just want to try and speak it. They hear the accent, they hear the crappy German, and they're like, well, this is just a dumb American. So they come back in English because in some respects they want to practice their English on me. So I find it difficult to really kind of get immersed in the language here. But is that something you found in a place like Munich a little bit easier to do?
I thought it was a bit easier. I would say it was not so easy for most German or Bavarians or Munich people to switch into English in my daily life. In my work, they had a different level of education, so then they could switch easily into English. But let's say at the bakery, in your daily life, at the supermarket, a bit everywhere when you had to interact for the bureaucracy as well, they could not really speak English. So you had no choice. You had to speak German.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing because you have no choice. Yeah. You're in survival mode. You learn so much quicker like this. However, the bad thing was that you need to get into something a bit more comforting and more known to you. Mm-hmm. So we tend to get around people who can speak a language we speak well.
Sure.
So I wouldn't say I had a big group of French speakers, but I had I knew a lot of expats who spoke English, and that kept me a little bit in a English speaking bubble, which was not so good, let's say, for the integration. I didn't have so many real Bavarian friends. I did eventually. But it took a little bit of time. It took some time by working in a German-speaking environment, so at the Opera House in Munich. That's how I really got to know more real German speakers, so real Munich people or Bavarians. And there you have no choice, and that's where you understand and you learn the more business German, let's say, the more advanced German than just ordering your bread or ordering at the restaurant.
Right.
Or bureaucratic German, which is hard as well, you know.
Sure.
Reading your letters, insurance, that kind of stuff. This, you have no choice. They don't send anything else than in all the documentation is in German. Whereas here, they will send it to you in the language that you prefer, even English. So we're very spoiled in Switzerland.
Yeah,
that.
I definitely feel like we're spoiled here because I think after 5 years, I probably should know more German than I do. But. There we go. I want to ask you about being an opera singer. And you said that you studied languages and opera. Do those two things go hand in hand? Because, I mean, opera is not really... I mean, what language is it sung in? Like a whole bunch of different languages, I guess.
Absolutely.
So was that like a part of the reason that you went with languages, or is it just a passion of yours?
I would say it goes hand in hand, and it's also a big passion of mine. I've always, always loved languages. I've always enjoyed French grammar. I don't know why. I was a bit of a geek when it came to that. And then I loved learning English. And then when I fell in love with opera, realizing that you had to sing in so many different languages, because the main languages we sing in would be mostly Italian, French, but also German, also in English, Spanish, Russian, Czech.
Wow.
So many different languages. There are so much. But the basic four, the standard four, would be French, German, Italian, and English. And that's what you have to study. These are the main ones you study at university. It's part of each program. Usually, if you want to be a well-rounded singer, you need to master these. Well, to know the basics at least. If you need to also have diction classes, that's provided usually in your in a good degree as an opera singer. You might be able to trick people into thinking that you speak the language well because you can read the text and it sounds perfect because you have the right diction and you might not really understand what you're saying. But I have to say, learning these languages and singing in so many different languages, especially in German, that really helped me because I knew some words without thinking about it from the repertoire that I had learned in German. And I would use these words, trying them, you know, trying to express myself. And they said, where did you learn this vocabulary? You know, that's really old German, or it's not quite what you want to say, but it's so poetic and it's nice. And I was like, okay, I'm trying here.
Don't give away your secrets.
So the whole opera singing, when did you, I guess, fall in love with it, or when did you realize that you can do that? Because not everybody can do that.
That's true. Well, I think I always loved classical music without knowing about it. My grandparents on my father's side loved opera, especially my grandfather. So as a very young child, they came to babysit us on a regular basis, and he would always put classical music in the background, usually opera overtures or very famous opera arias. So I was kind of bathed in that as a very young child. And I started doing, little pre-music school when I was three. I played the xylophone, and I could sing in tune from a very, very early age, but I didn't really think about all of this at that
sure.
time.
Yeah.
I played the piano. My parents are doctors, so they wanted me, you know, to develop my rational and my more emotional side. And they thought, okay, piano is good for mathematics in the future. It will help her develop herself. Little did they know that I would choose to go in an artistic field instead of a more scientific field, which is what they had hoped at the beginning. Actually, I was faced when I was about 17, I was faced with the decision making, so choosing what should I do with my life. It was difficult because I loved a little bit of everything, and maybe that's why I'm an entrepreneur now, because I like to do a lot of different things, and I couldn't see myself just focusing on one field, which was the medical school for my parents at that time.
Plus blood, you know, the whole blood
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. No, it's not gross. For me. I would be a terrible doctor. I would right. cry. I would faint, you know.
Right.
Oh, no. I couldn't do this. Anyways, and I've always been a little bit, not dramatic, but artistic in my way of being. I love dressing up. I love makeup and languages. And when I discovered opera, it just made sense. It was out of the blue like this. I had never really sung. I knew I could hear all the music in my head. I couldn't play the piano as well as what I could hear in my head. And there was a kind of snow class with my high school, and we had to do a silly presentation, and I knew all the Walt Disney songs, like the Bibbidi-Boo, La Menchikaboo, you know, the Cinderella magic spell song. And they said, Isabelle, can you sing this? And I don't know why I just started singing this and belting out that opera voice, which I didn't even know I had. And everybody was kind of flabbergasted. They didn't mm-hmm. understand what was happening. I didn't understand what was happening. And they all told me, you should take voice lessons. You have a beautiful voice. Mm-hmm. And that's how it started. And so I was doing my studies in more of a scientific field. And I realized after a while, the only thing I really, really liked was my voice lesson once a week. And I tried to push myself. My teacher at that time said, you should go and ask at the Opéra de Montréal, the Montreal Opera House, if there's a teacher who could continue with you, because you don't really have a pop voice. You have a classical voice. And so once a week, I would go to Montreal, study with that young singer who was a member of the opera studio there. And I just really fell in love with it, even though it was a bit of a fight with my family. They didn't agree. And I just went with it. And I got into McGill, which is one of the top 10 music school in Canada. And I think in North America, it's one of the top as well. And then I just went with it. I just really embraced my new vocation.
Sure. Now, what... getting back to Munich a little bit before we get the transition to Switzerland... I've been there once. I really enjoyed that city. What is it do you miss most about a place like Munich?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I would say the first thing would be the opera. For me, the opera house, because this was a very, very big central point of my life when I was living there. The cultural aspect of Munich, there is so much to do. It's a huge city. Mm-hmm. I think there's 1.5 million inhabitants there. It's a big hub for finance, for technology to a certain extent, but it's very cultural. There are so many museums. So I miss the excitement maybe of a bigger city. But I would say now in my life, I'm a mom and it's a different stage of my life. I'm very happy that I live in a quieter part of the world. But I would say that's the hustle and bustle that I miss from Munich. I don't miss the Oktoberfest so much, because when you live there, 3 weeks of drunken people vomiting on the floor.
You get over it pretty quick.
Yeah, exactly. You try to rent your apartment on Airbnb during that time, make a bit of money, and you come back afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. That's what people do in Basel Faschnacht. They disappear for 2 weeks. So when you compare where you live now in Geneva to somewhere like Munich, which is so important with like the cultural history with opera. Does that, is there a, you know, is there a part of that that you that doesn't compare, or that Geneva is lacking in, or anything like that?
So Munich compared to Geneva,
yeah.
That's the question. I think Geneva has a lot to offer. Obviously, it's a smaller city in size and in the number of inhabitants as well. But I think there is so much happening. I don't know if people around you here in Basel, they say, oh, it's boring in Switzerland, there's nothing to do culturally. I think they're wrong. They just don't look for the right things. Of course, it's not like in London or Paris or Munich. You are not submerged with publicities everywhere and you don't even know where to go at night because there's just too much to do. But there is actually a lot to do. And culturally speaking, there is a lot as well. Lots of beautiful museums. It's maybe a smaller scale compared to the ones in Munich. But there is a beautiful opera house. Actually, they're about to reopen in September. Le Grand Théâtre de Genève, that's the name. It's very beautiful. They spent, I think, 4 years renovating it.
Wow.
And I'm happy to say that one of my best friends from Canada, so Canada represent, she's going to be reopening the theater with lots of new young professional singers. They're creating a new ensemble. So if anyone likes opera, I really recommend going to see the their performances there.
And seeing as it's your friend, I assume she's gotten you a VIP ticket.
I hope so. If she's listening, I'm expecting it.
Well, the Swiss Pass will come to Geneva and watch as well. Send us a VIP ticket our way.
Let me know.
So we mentioned briefly at the beginning that you have kids. You've got one son and you're pregnant with your second child. Is giving birth in Switzerland, having a baby in Switzerland, was that something that you ever envisioned happening? And how has been the experience in that regard?
So I never really thought that I would live in Switzerland one day, actually. I don't think any of us did. Huh? I knew I would have kids one day. Coming from Quebec, from Canada, where we have a very good healthcare system and free.
Yeah.
So I thought we were always really lucky, and I knew things should go well. In Germany, I've never really used the healthcare system so much because I was a healthy young lady. Yeah? And then it's worrying when you know you're going to give birth and it's all the process of preparing mentally and everything. I have to say, I think we live in the best country in the world for giving birth.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I never thought, I mean, compared to the birth stories of my friends in Canada or anywhere else, we are extremely lucky, extremely spoiled. My experience, at least, I was lucky to have a semi-private room. Well, in fact, it was a private room. And I thought it was like a 5-star hotel, really. I never thought I would say that. I loved being at the hospital for a week.
They want you to stay there so relax and get used to being a new mom.
Exactly. You were there a whole week?
6 days.
Wow.
So, of course, the insurance covers it, so they're happy if you stay longer. It makes more money. But I have to say, I want to share a little bit the experience for my husband. So for fathers here, they don't have a very big paternity leave. Huh? It's only one day. So for him, he's in a bit of a special situation at the moment because he's looking for a job. And I think that if he had been working when we had our baby, he couldn't have had the experience that he's having at the moment. So because he was looking for a job when I had the baby, he could stay with me. And that is something that any father can do when you have the private or semi-private insurance or even in the regular hospital, I think. Where we were at the Hôpital La Tour, he had his own bed next to me and I had an emergency C-section. So if I had been alone, it would have been a completely different experience trying to take care of my baby, first time breastfeeding and everything. But he was there next to me the whole time. He was bonding with the baby from the very beginning, doing the skin to skin. He was there, you know, to give him to me. He bathed the baby. That I haven't done all the diaper changing at the beginning or the bathing. He did everything. And
yeah,
now,
that first diaper change is disgusting, I will say.
You're not used to it. I have to say, because he did much more than me. he was much more comfortable than me when I felt a bit better and I could take care of the baby and mm-hmm. do all this care. 1 year down the line, he has such a strong bond with our child. He can do anything that I can do. And I think there are things he does better than I do as well. So I think that paternity leave is so important.
It's interesting mm-hmm. you say that because on the one hand, you had a really, really great experience, but if he'd been working, the paternity wouldn't have been great. And we actually covered a story a few months ago about how for families, Switzerland actually rates very low because mm-hmm. of exactly what you just said, yeah. things like yeah. paternity. So we've still got some way to go. But do you feel like that you were lucky in a sense that, like to me, giving birth in Switzerland petrifies me. I'm not having any more babies, so I don't have to worry about it. But if I had a medical emergency or a pregnancy or something else in Switzerland, my German is not good enough. But you speak French, mm-hmm. so you had that benefit. So I guess it felt like home a little, maybe.
Absolutely. But don't they speak English as well? Because we have that... They could have spoken to me in English or French.
They do. They do. But that mm-hmm. kind of, I guess, dovetails to when you first came to Geneva. I mean, did you find that situation of kind of adapting to life in Switzerland a bit easier because there wasn't that barrier, right? So like Susie and I had a bunch of barriers, right? Like you have, you know, figuring out what to do with this and that, but then you also have the language, right? But you know, it's no big deal. I speak French. I'm very jealous of that, but that's okay. But you know what I'm saying? Like that just tears down one of those barriers. So, I mean, did that help your transition to Switzerland? And then once you knew you were moving from Munich to Switzerland, you said it was for your husband's job. I mean, what did you do for yourself? I mean, what did you say, okay, what do I have to do to kind of, you know, get my little corner mm-hmm. of life figured out while he's off, you know, with his job?
Okay, so I'll try to remember what...
Is that how you kind of led into the whole language mm-hmm, thing? Is that mm-hmm. is that what sparked it? See where I was going with that?
Absolutely. There's a point to that. That's super. That's true. I think as a French speaker coming to French-speaking Switzerland, it made the transition much easier than when I moved to Munich or to Germany. Much, much easier. Even when I moved to Montreal, it was a bit of a shock having to use English on a regular basis when I was not... so proficient in it. Mm-hmm. So whenever there's an expatriation plus the language factor, that makes it even more difficult, for sure. I have to say, though, that coming from Quebec, I have a different French. So I speak a very international French when I'm in Europe. But when I'm back in Quebec, I have quite a thick accent, but I have a Quebec accent, which is okay. different. And here I still had to adapt because there were words or expressions that they didn't understand from my French or that I didn't understand. Sure. It's very small. It's a bit like British English or Australian English and American English.
Right, right, right.
So you still understand each other, but it makes you smile. There are lots of new colorful expressions, which is also a very enriching for your own mother tongue. Huh? Yeah. So... coming here,
I'm still not calling a cookie a biscuit, though. It's still a cookie.
That's it. Well,
so I draw the line there.
I think I've been brainwashed with a British person, exactly.
So I think I've got somebody on my side with this. You might be on your own here, Don.
But I have to say, I learned Canadian English, which is very similar to the American English, and then yeah. Having been with my husband for almost 8 years now. I say rubbish, and it's not the garbage anymore. It's not the pants, it's the trousers. So I adapted.
Don's kids go to a British school, and they say British things, and I love it. I high-five them every time they say rubbish. It's the best.
They do. Well, this is globalization, that's my right, dear, yeah. Depending where you live.
Yeah. You signed up for this, Don.
I did. I'm cool with it.
But what is cool is that when they go back to the U.S., I think they adapt and they will probably use the other words, the other vocabulary. Mm-hmm. Huh? Mm-hmm. So as long as we can switch into and tune into the Americanized version or the Britishized version.
Exactly. So you started the language school, which is a completely online school. So that started when you moved to Geneva?
Okay, so yes, coming back to your question. When I moved to Geneva, I didn't have any plan because I was starting from scratch. I thought I would continue my career as an opera singer. And for anything in any business, you need to make connections. You need to start developing your network. It's like in acting, you need to do auditions. It takes a while. That's why coming from Munich, where I had established myself, I had all my coaches and I was doing a lot of performances and doing quite well, working for the opera house. Having to start all over again was a bit daunting for me, but I did it. The first year, I would say, because of my husband's job, we traveled so much. We were so lucky. And in Geneva, that's where the headquarter of EasyJet is. So I would say we were more outside the country than in the country itself. We were really enjoying, you know, discovering Europe. And for me, it was super nice not knowing so much about Europe. He also had, part of his company was offshore in Vietnam. So we spent almost 4 months in Vietnam.
Wow.
And there, I was teaching English to the employees of the company. I must mention that while I was an opera singer in Munich, I was also working as a French and English language coach. In Munich, the job of an opera singer has its up and downs. You cannot always rely on the fact that you'll make enough money at the end of the month. So I started teaching, something which I always loved. And I really developed my experience. I worked for many big companies, big language companies in Munich, online and face-to-face as well. So in person, in companies, focusing on business French or business English. So I got to know the Germans very well. It was lovely for me to, by teaching, I really got into understanding their way of thinking much better. That was a really good thing. Actually, I improved my German a lot by teaching French and English because they had their words in German and I had to figure out, okay, what is it in English or French? And
there you go. That's all we have to do. Just start teaching. English and French and and we'll learn German.
I feel so bad for those people.
So actually, it was not like I need to do something, I should start a school. This was something that had been ongoing in some form for really quite a long time.
Exactly. So for 4 years in Munich, I was working as a language coach. And then when we moved to Geneva, I thought, why working for another company? I think what I do is very different from what's being offered on the market. I'm going to start my own thing with my own methodology, with my own way of seeing things as an expat who had to learn various languages. So I'm not a French teacher who only speaks French and that's all I know. I'm a multilingual teacher. I specialize in teaching French. But I really understand the reality of expats, how it is when you land in a new place, what you need to be able to find, to get around and just be able to survive in your new environment. And this is our methodology.
Wow, that's great, because it's just a little bit more than just teaching someone a language, right? So this language, this passion you have for languages and the, you know, I'm seeing you have this passion for languages, you know a lot of languages, which is, again, really upsetting and jealous. I'm seething with jealousy with the amount of languages you know and how easily you could switch back and forth. But then, obviously, the opera singing. Where are you with the opera singing? Obviously, we'll get into a little bit more of this language here in a second, but where's the status of the opera singer Isabel Johnson?
Oh, so right now it's a little bit on hold because I'm about to have a little baby.
See, I'm going to let you say it first. I didn't want to bring it up. A man should never assume that the woman's pregnant, but yes.
It's not over. It will never be over. I mean, I sing every day for my little boy. I'm a singer, so I sing when I speak. There's always a lot of singing happening all the time, not a lot of real opera singing because that would be a bit scary for a one-year-old.
Right, maybe. Tone it down a bit, Mom, yeah.
But definitely I will start again probably in 2020. That's my goal. I'm still performing. I get some contracts to perform a little bit around Switzerland, mm-hmm. Part of some masses or some recitals with piano or orchestra. The last big performance that I did actually was a tour for the UN. It was a peace and unification tour that we did with the UN Singers of New York City,
okay.
combined with the UN Singers of Geneva. And we went to South Korea and Japan.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
That was an amazing experience. This was just one in a lifetime, very enriching experience. Mm-hmm. So this is what I did as my biggest, performance in the last few months. I still perform as a soloist, maybe in a smaller scale since I've had my baby, for mm-hmm. sure. But once things are a little bit more settled with the second one,
sure.
I would be delighted to continue singing. And yeah. It's part of my life. I cannot stop that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So do you know what you're having? You have a son. Now do you know what you're having?
A little baby girl.
Oh, you're going to have one of
yes!
each. I have one of each. And it's great. It's fantastic. So congratulations again for that. Because that is... But two kids is, we'll say,
it's going to change things, huh? One is already a lot, but you know, in French, we say le choix du roi, so the choice of the king, when you have both children. So you have the best of both
you
worlds.
You do. You really do. It's great. It's great. So this, when it comes to your language school, I do want to get into some things because, you know, I hear people, especially here in the German-speaking areas, a lot of people have been saying things back and forth about, you know, different rules have been changed, right, mm-hmm. for language requirements. Obviously, we're speaking to someone who probably knows, right? So what's up with all this? And what are some of these, how is this, something did change in January of 2019, correct, especially for expats. So mm-hmm. can we kind of dive into that a little bit? Can you explain that just a bit?
So as a disclaimer, I am not an expert on all of this. And also, it's changing all the time. I don't think at the Office des Migrations, so that's the Office of the Population and the Migration,
okay.
I think they don't know themselves what exactly is happening at the moment. It's so fresh. I think they're giving themselves a year to be able to implement the new rules. Basically, what happened is that I think they thought the language requirements were maybe a little bit too loose over the last few years. And
sure.
they want to make sure that it's a bit more... that it's a bit similar in every canton, that mm-hmm. when you obtain a permis, so a long-term work contract, or you ask for your Swiss naturalization, you can really speak one of the official languages of the country. Mm-hmm. So whether it's French, German, Italian, Romanche, I don't know how many people learn Romanche.
Not many.
But one of these three languages. And they want to make sure that you know it at quite a good level so mm-hmm. you can really integrate yourself. You can speak normally. You're not just part of your little expat bubble, which is unfortunately what has happened to some of us.
Huh? Well, you mentioned it earlier. It's, you know, you kind of gravitate a little toward the comfort of speaking other people who speak your language, you know?
Exactly.
It's just human nature, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. So as of January 2019, they've changed the rules. They're a little bit harder, stricter. If you want to apply for the permis, so you know what a permis is. Mm-hmm. Huh? If you've been here for 5 years or 10 years, again, there are lots of different requirements.
Sure.
I invite you to check in your canton.
We won't hold it against you. I say
exactly.
Things that are wrong all the time.
No, I've researched this a lot, so I know quite well. You have various permis anticipated or regular, so it depends on your situation if you've been here, but you have to have been here for a minimum of 5 years uninterrupted living here in Switzerland, and then you can ask for that permis. And for those whose mother tongue is not one of the official languages of Switzerland, you have to prove that you have level A2 mm-hmm. or B1 for your oral skills and A1 or A2 for your written skills. So I'm saying one or the other because it depends which kind of permis you're asking.
Okay.
So the C permit.
Okay. All right. And so there was a couple other things about that I wanted to touch on. I guess the first thing is the, and maybe I'm saying this wrong, the FIDE language passport. What is that?
What is this? Yes. I know. That's what I asked myself as well when I saw it the first time.
Self, what the hell is this?
So in French, we would say FIDE.
Okay.
In English, probably FIDE, FIDE,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's F-I-D-E, so yeah, FIDE, FIDE, yeah.
I guess the Germans would say FIDE as well, right. And the Italians as well, yes. FIDE. So let's call it FIDE.
Sounds good.
Because the three other languages would say it like this. So FIDE, that's a very good question. This is a new language passport, and I want to make sure that I'm saying the right things. So I wrote everything down here exactly. So FIDE, this is the new standardized certification for language, for languages here, and for naturalization for your permit renewals in Switzerland. So the FIDE language passport proves your ability to communicate in one or more of the national Swiss languages, which are French, German, and Italian. As I said, Romanche. Not so used, huh? It is also recognized by the authorities when enrolling for further training courses and when you're applying for a new job. So this FIDE language passport is new. They've just put that into place very recently, I would say less than a year ago. And apparently this will be required as of January 2020. That will be the go-to language test that you will have to pass. The language passport that you have to provide if you want in the future to get your C permit or your Swiss naturalization.
Okay.
So these language tests are only available where the language is spoken. So let's say if you want to do the French language test FIDE, you can only take that in the French-speaking part of Switzerland. If you're living in a German-speaking part, you can do it. The German test, same thing for the Italian part. So it's not clear there. It's not exactly clear where you can do all these examinations. Mm-hmm. They've produced a new list, which they update quite frequently, but you can check on the FIDE. It's F-I-D-E. So FIDE means French, Italian, Deutsch. That's why
that.
They
How
call it
that?
Like this.
Yeah, that's fun. I always like that. Do you know what's in these exams and how somebody can kind of prepare for these things?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So it's not a secret. You can find everything online. However, if you don't speak the language very well, mm-hmm. it might be hard to prepare for it. When you do these exams, I would really recommend that you find a good language school where you can prepare for it, for the oral and written part. So let's talk about that. So the FIDE language test is divided into two sections. So there's the speaking, oral, and listening. That's the first part. And then there's the reading and writing. So the oral and writing skills are assessed separately. It will be done by an examiner live. So that's a bit of the stressful part you're being evaluated in real time. They will check first, it's starting with level A2. So they mm-hmm. see, do you reach that level? And if you seem like you're good enough with that level, you feel comfortable answering to the various questions, then they will move to questions which are of level B1. So okay. During that exam, you can be assessed for level A2 and get to B1 if they see that you're comfortable with that. So that's the first part. Then the second part would be the written exam. So the oral and writing skills are assessed separately, and there is an option to enroll for only one section if you need only the oral exam to be proven. So the complete test will meet the requirements for the naturalization process, and both sections, so oral and written, need to be passed with a minimum score of A2 for the writing and B1 for the oral examination. That's when you do your naturalization.
Ah, okay. All right, but that's like 12 years down the road.
Exactly. That's... For the permisé, normally it's A2 for the oral part and A1 for the written part. But that's when you do the regular permisé. If it's anticipé, it's different. It will be B1 oral and A1 for the written.
Okay, okay.
So you see, it's really confusing. You have to check online what your real situation is.
Yeah, and now there's also something called the DELF certificate?
Yes. Okay. So the DELF, that's a little bit more well known. It's been established for a long time. That's a French requirement from France.
Okay.
So that's like a diploma like the IELTS or the TOEFL. In English, let's say. Mm-hmm. So that's the equivalent. That's to assess your level of French, which is currently recognized all around the world. The FIDE is new. That's a Swiss thing. Gotcha. You couldn't do that in France or in Belgium. So that's a new thing. So the DELF has been established for a very long time. And right now, this is okay to show that you have level A2 with DELF. You can show your DELF certificate and you will get your permis without any problem. So if you've already done the DELF...
in some other country or... I see.
Or even here in Switzerland, you can do it in Switzerland as well.
Okay.
No problem. But apparently, as of January 2020, and I'm saying apparently because this is... I've spoken with the authorities, so the migration canton in Geneva, it changes from one canton to the other, but I think that's what they want to do here in Switzerland. They want the FIDE exam, which is a Swiss exam, to be the only exam which will be used of January 2020.
Okay.
So until then, you can still use your DELF, you can still do the DELF, but from experience, the DELF exam is a bit harder than the FIDE exam. So I would really recommend doing the FIDE exam.
Okay.
It's a bit easier to get. It's a bit easier to prepare. And it's also, why I'm saying this is because the FIDE really evaluates language skills which you will use in your daily life. Mm-hmm. It's not just some really complex French exam which is really theoretical and you will not use it in your everyday life.
So the FIDE is more like common sense, like just getting by in day-to-day life.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. See, I like that. That makes more sense. I mean, that's sometimes why I got frustrated when I was taking the lessons, because, like, I just want to learn, like, how to just navigate daily life, right? Like, do I really, is it super important that it's, I know it's Das Buch and not Der Buch? Like, all right, what, come on now. Like, this is where that frustration begins, and you're just like, forget it, I don't want to learn it, right? But if you want to teach me just some conversational stuff, that'd be great, you know, and learn kind of the basic ideas on where to put the verbs and how to conjugate things, and then I'm listening, you know what I mean? But that's just me, that's just how I learn.
You're not the only one.
Because I was just not a quote-unquote good student.
I think you're not the only one, and far from that. I think most expats here, we are super busy. We are working. We have our families.
Sure.
We don't have so much time to spend 3 hours every day on learning German or Italian or French. What we need is to be able to use the language efficiently, learn it quickly, and learn something which is useful, not just some theoretical special verbs which you'll never really use or vocabulary which won't be used. In fact, what you need to learn, it's a mix of about 3,000 words to be able to get by at the very beginning for the first year.
Okay.
So it's not that complex, not that difficult. It is if it's done with a methodology which shows you the whole range of what you could learn in French or in German or in Italian, like the Dider das. Dider das, that's necessary. You have, necessary to a certain extent, because if you have the word Buch, people will understand that it's a book. No matter if it's a die, der, or das. It's the same in French. If you say le livre, in French it's masculine. If you say la livre, okay, some people might say la livre is a pound.
Okay.
It changes the meaning of it.
Okay.
But in its context, knowing that you're a foreigner, they will know, okay, he's looking for a book. We're in a bookstore. You're not looking for a pound.
Let's look at the context clues here. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So when you try to learn or teach common sense languages, and that's what we do at Prêt-à-Parler, we don't want you to just learn super complex verb tense like the passé simple, which you will never use. Okay, if you want to learn it later on because you're interested in learning a bit more about the culture, the refinement of the language, yes, no problem. We can teach you that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessary when you're a beginner. We teach common sense French at Prêt-à-Parler, and that's it. The name of my company is Ready to Talk. You need to be ready to talk. That's what you need in your everyday life.
So explain to people how they could find out more about your company and about the lessons and what you offer.
Sure. So we are a completely online language school, which is a little bit unusual. I would say we're the only one here in French-speaking Switzerland,
okay,
which is completely online. Maybe I can explain why I switched to online learning. Mm-hmm. Because I taught face-to-face for a long time. I really enjoyed it as well. But I think in this day and age, and you are a father of two.
Yeah.
Same thing for me, soon mother of two, very soon. We don't have much time on our hand. If we're working on top of that, the free time is almost non-existent, or if you have a bit of free time, you want to use it for something, a bit of entertainment, right? Relaxing. Right. So going to a language school, which would take you maybe 30 minutes to get there, or an hour, sitting for 2-3 hours, then coming back, that's a big chunk of your day, right?
Sure.
It was the same for me when I was teaching. I had to get to the client's place. What do you do when you arrive there? Because I was giving private lessons. You chit-chat in the hall, have a little cup of tea.
Yeah.
This turns that 90 minutes turns into maybe close to 2 hours.
Sure.
Huh? Yeah. So, and then getting from A to B, having to carry all your books. This was a heavy thing for the teachers doing this, or even for the students. You have to carry everything with you. I forgot my homework, blah, blah, blah. So when I started teaching online, I just couldn't see the reason of continuing teaching face-to-face. Because to me, as a very efficient Canadian mom, let's say, I don't have time to lose.
Yeah.
I want to use my time efficiently.
Every second matters during the day. And
exactly.
Cutting out the unimportant things. Yeah.
That's it. You know crock pots?
Oh, I do.
They don't exist in Switzerland. I had to order mine from Germany.
I know, so did I.
You want to be efficient, use your crock pot.
That's right.
Things are done, yep, and it's delicious. So I would compare it a little
wait
bit.
Wait till your kids get older, and then you make that meal, and they're like, ew, I don't want this.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's it. No. I've been cooking all day long. Did you see? It was simmering all day long.
No, and then they pick out the things they don't like. And they're, ew, I don't want those.
Oh, I'm
like,
not
there
yet. I
just busted my ass for 45 minutes in the kitchen. You're going to eat it.
You're going to eat. There's no alternative.
Yeah, exactly. No, crockpots are great. So is it through Skype? Is that what you use?
So I started a little bit on Skype.
Okay.
I would say it was 5 years ago. Skype is okay.
Okay.
I'm going to be a bit snob here. It's not good enough.
Okay.
Skype has its limitation. It's great for the free version or even the business version, but the connection is not very good. So we don't use Skype, we use Zoom. And Zoom is used a lot in business environments.
Sure.
It's really great. You can record the lesson. You have the chat box, which becomes a word text. So anything that is written in the chat box will be sent to you at the end of the lesson. The connection is very, very good. We have a whiteboard. You can share your screen as well with the audio, any video. So anything and everything can be done during your online private lesson.
Okay.
You don't only have the physical book where this is what you do with most schools. You have that book and you follow the program. With online learning, the internet is your oyster. There, mm-hmm, there's infinite resources. You have these books which are also available in online versions, but you have the whole internet, magazines, blogs, newspapers, lots of different exercises online as well. With Prêt-à-Parler, we also have developed our online learning platform, which is called French for Everyday Life. Okay. And that's really what we want. We want you to be able to use French in your everyday life.
Mm, yeah.
So it's 10 modules, which okay are developed so that you learn or review the basics from A0, which is beginners, to A2, which is elementary. And that's what you need, level A2, to feel comfortable in your everyday life.
Sure.
And to pass the permis C.
Yeah.
As well, the C permit.
And is it individual one-on-one or is it group classes? How does that?
So we could do group classes, but I don't recommend this.
Okay.
What we really offer is mostly private lessons, and that's really efficient. If you do group lessons, when you think about it, you have to follow a little bit what the teacher has prepared. If someone's a little bit more advanced, you can make progress with that, but you sometimes don't dare to ask if you don't understand.
Sure.
You don't get as much time to speak. So we really prefer giving private lessons. Sometimes we have couples lessons, so semi-private.
Okay.
Again, sometimes there's competition in the couple if you're a little bit more advanced than your partner. So we really prefer the private lessons.
Okay.
But in the future, it's not excluded. We might be offering a small group, let's say 2 or 3 participants, not sure. More.
Okay. And so what's the website and where can they contact you?
So the website is www.pretaparler. I'm going to spell it.
Okay.
PRETAPARLER.CH.
Okay.
So prêt-à-parler, you know, prêt-à-manger, prêt-à-porter, or I'm going to say it more with an English accent, prêt-à-manger, prêt-à-porter. And prêt-à means ready to, parler means talk. So you're ready to talk with us.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on, and we managed to get through the whole podcast without talking Expos baseball.
Oh, no, you know? I'm so disappointed.
I know. I'm sure our listeners, and especially Susie, isn't disappointed because she tunes out whenever I talk sports. So thank you so much for coming to Basel and coming on, telling us your story. And if you're looking to learn French, you are the lady to talk to. Maybe in a few more months, though, after
the kids still get, now. It's still running. Now. I have great teachers, great assistants awesome. To keep everything running. Thank you so much for having me, and we'll talk about the Expos next time. All don't right. worry.
Thanks.
Thank you, Isabel, for that awesome interview. And before we move on to our next news item, we just want to give a quick shout out to Jonathan Martin from the Facebook page, A Schwabscher Lad in Switzerland. We think Jonathan is awesome. We steal all of his news articles and recreate them and re-talk about them right here on SwissPat. So a big thank you to Jonathan for providing that service on Facebook.
We have permission to steal from Jonathan.
Yeah, he lets us. If you do want to get your news in a, you know, Facebook way, then check out Jonathan's page, which is A Schwabscher Lad in Switzerland. Which, if you are not sure how to spell Schwabscher, it's Schropshire, and it's a county in England.
I'm still hearing a W in there. Still should be a W.
No W. But there you go. Thank you, Jonathan. What do you got for us, Don?
So, as we all know, that my esteemed colleague here, Mrs. Susie Lyon, used to be a police officer.
I did. God now, help us all.
Yeah, that was a few years ago. But if you really want to feel old, there's a new story out from the Zurich police. There is a new global trend that all the kids are doing.
All the kids.
That I have no idea what they do. Anyway, the Zurich police apparently launched this latest one. Now, you've heard of things like the Harlem Shake, right?
Oh, yeah. That started in Australia.
Right. Okay.
It did.
Okay. I believe you. You're very proud of that.
Google it.
What was the other one? The ice bucket challenge.
There planking.
Was planking. All these things that just happened. Well, this latest one, apparently, according to our friends at World Radio Switzerland, where you could hear us Fridays on the breakfast show with Mark Butcher, that there is something called the Tetris challenge. And what happened was the Zurich police released this picture on its Facebook page showing all the equipment carried by an average police car laid out on the ground very neatly, right? But among all the very neatly laid out equipment that was in this police car are both of the policemen laying down. Now, emergency forces around the world are starting to do the same. Ambulances in the U.S. and fire brigades in China. And it's been named the Tetris Challenge.
Very, very cool. It actually looks a lot of fun. And you can even already buy books where they have photography of this same sort of thing in different items. I have a book called Things Arranged Neatly.
Ooh.
Yeah, and it's the same idea.
For our OCD friends.
Yeah,
huh?
So like it might be like 100 blue things and then they're all arranged in a way that looks very neat.
And oddly satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so this picture
it is satisfying.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It's like there's two helmets neatly put together. There's the cones that are like wedged in perfectly. Like, it's just, it's a, it is, it's a very nicely, nice photo. And the Zurich police are amazed by how popular it's become.
Oh, you just can't recreate a fad. It would just, it has to come naturally.
Yeah.
The thing is that these photos are taken from above.
So like with a drone,
they must be taken with a drone, which is interesting because don't Switzerland train hawks to go after drones?
That's a rumor, yeah. I think they did that. They tried that down in Geneva.
Rule for one, another for the police. That's what they say.
That is what they say. Or it could have been just a really tall ladder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they had a really tall member of staff take the photo for him.
Yeah, former guy that played on the Swiss national basketball team.
Exactly.
Threw him a camera and be like, hey, take a picture. Anyway, so yeah, check it out. It's the picture's on worldradio.ch. And yeah, it's just a very oddly satisfying photo. Apparently, the Zurich police now are big deals.
Yeah, big, big deal. Do you, have you partaken, is that a word?
Sure, we'll go with it.
Partaken in any fads? What's your favorite fad? What's your favorite global phenomenon?
Bootcut jeans, I would say.
Not those really wide ones that they...
Genco jeans? No.
They're not your favorite?
No, I didn't wear Genco jeans. Yeah.
I used to collect Tazos. Do they have those in America?
No.
Do you remember Pogs?
No.
Okay, so they were round disc things and you collected them and then you'd hit them with a hard round plastic thing. And it was a game.
Okay.
And then Tazos, they used to give away in packets of crisps / chips, as we call them in Australia. Mm-hmm. And I collected every single one of them.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my favorite fad.
Oh, I was into baseball cards. Like, yeah, I'd say that
same
was kind
thing,
of a fad.
But just...
Yeah. Pointless. Absolutely pointless.
Absolutely pointless. And a lot of wasted money.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so props to the Zurich police for doing their part in making a fad.
Nice
so.
To put Zurich on the map. For if it's going to be known for one thing, why not be this photo?
Doing the Tetris Challenge begin in Zurich, Switzerland. All right, so that does it for another edition of Swiss Pats. I would like to thank Isabel for joining us. As always, you can find us on all of our social media channels. And hit us up. Let us know what's going on, what you like, what you don't like. Download us at all your favorite places to download podcasts. And until next week, we'll talk to you then.
Bye.
Yummy, bon, that is the